Good evening, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, June 1st, 2008. It is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic oversized and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, and we should have an hour broadcast this evening, you're invited to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620, or email us at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Before we start, I'd like to encourage everyone to please get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com. That two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Folks, things are getting bad out there. They're getting critical. They're getting tight. It's like the tectonic plates being sprung into action. And please visit Andy. He'll assist you and tell you where we're going in plain English. In fact, I even understand him. He's an economist, and I understand what he's talking about. I do encourage you to even subscribe to his free newsletter, and he has a subscription newsletter. Both are invaluable to me. They will be invaluable to you. This evening, folks, I have a little quip here that I must read because I have conversations with people regarding how we could never function without controls emanating from a centralized government. And I want to read something. This is from the Future of Freedom Foundation. Saturday, May 31st, 2008 edition. It says, and what about building codes and their enforcement? It is a great myth that these are somehow responsible for the soundness of our buildings. Private enterprise meets the demand for safety as well as it meets any consumer demand. Your house does not fall in because of building codes, but because the builders are liable for mistakes and because there is competition among them to build better buildings. What's more, private enterprise regulates itself with a vast array of regulatory codes that are self-enforcing. Underwriters Laboratory, for example, is an entirely private organization. So why do the government codes exist? Mostly they are used by large companies to erect barriers to the entry of smaller firms. Touche, folks. It's exactly what happens when you look at all the regulations. Okay, let's see. This evening, we will have calling in the next couple of minutes, Brian Holtz from the Libertarian Reform Caucus. There's an assumption that libertarians are libertarians, and philosophically we're on the page, which is true. But how we get there is another story. I have learned that there are many aspects to the Libertarian Party that, quite frankly, I am totally unfamiliar with. In other words, we all believe in the same principles, but it becomes a question of how we get there. Now we're going to, I think this is Brian on the phone right now.
Yeah, this is Brian.
Brian from the Libertarian Reform Caucus. You are on Liberty Talk Radio, and this is Joe Cristiano. Good evening, and thank you for calling in this evening.
Hi, Joe. It's great to be here.
Great. Now, let me ask you, Brian, were you at the Libertarian National Convention?
Yes, I was there in Denver.
Okay, you were there in Denver. I'm not certain. I met so many people. I'm not certain if I had occasion to speak with you. Did I?
I'm not sure either. It's all kind of a blur to me now.
Same here. Okay, well, thank you so much for being on our show. It is now about 8.05 p.m. Our time. I guess it's 6.05 p.m. your time. You're in Pacific time. We have
Great.
About 50 minutes or so, so we're going to have plenty of time to go through this. I was just telling our radio audience that I have been a member of the Libertarian Party for about 20 years or so, and I was always under the assumption that the Libertarian Party was kind of holistic, all one in the same, one throbbing heart, and everyone going moving to the same beat. I have since learned that's really not very, very true, especially after this convention. So, Brian, what I'd like for you to tell us first, tell us something about yourself, how you got where you are, what your position is with the Libertarian Reform Caucus, what are you trying to achieve, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. Well, I haven't been in the LP quite as long as you have. I always considered myself a small L libertarian from at least the 80s when I first heard that term. But I always kind of resisted joining the LP formally, having considered the platform to be a bit extreme. But it didn't take long for George W. Bush to convince me that the Republicans were a lost cause, and so I became an activist around the time that Bush was elected the first time.
May I just stop you? I've heard that. I hear that from about everyone saying you're a libertarian, you're an extremist. When you say you thought it was a bit extreme, could you qualify that for our listeners, please?
Sure. Up until at least through 2004, the LP platform included provisions like personal secession, saying that you could declare yourself exempt from all the laws of the various levels of government around you. Or another provision was the platform called for immediate non-enforcement of all tax laws. Another example is immediate unlimited immigration, you know, complete open borders overnight, throw the switch. So these were the kinds of examples that, are interesting from a philosophical and theoretical perspective, and they make for great, supper club talk and faculty lounge discussions, but they aren't quite, they tend to self-marginalize us as a party.
Okay, all right, very good. I know where you're coming from, and I understand what you're saying now. Okay, now, please continue, and I apologize for interrupting, but I did need that clarification.
Sure, no problem. It's interesting because the platform is something that, it's never really clear how many people read it, but when people do read it, we need to be careful that it's something that unites us and doesn't push out potential new members who want, as we all do, more liberty. And I think that's the unifying thing. When you talk about whether the libertarians are united or not, I mean, I guess it all depends on the perspective. But I think what we all agree is that we all just really are disgusted with the nanny state and the way the government tries to be, our mom and our dad. And so we all are on this freedom train, heading towards more freedom. And again, it's kind of a academic distinctions among us about what to do, when we get down to like the last 2 or 3% of the government, whether we should get rid of the rest of it. But those are the kinds of things that we shouldn't let divide us, because we have, a common enemy.
Okay, now, when was the Libertarian Reform Caucus organized? By whom, and what was their main thrust?
I think it was organized in 2005, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, so it's really a new organization. We don't have much history so far. Okay.
Yeah. Interestingly, I've since found that there was a similar effort in the early 90s. I think it was called the Committee for a Libertarian Majority, which was organized to try to do basically the same sorts of things. The two main goals being to moderate the pledge, the Libertarian Party pledge, and also to moderate the platform. And the group was founded in 2005, I think, the current incarnation, by Carl Milstead and Bernard Carman and Bob Capozzi, some fellows like that. And So it had some relatively quick growth and success. In 2006, the Reform Caucus, was organized for the Portland Convention and came to that convention with a list of about 15 platform planks that it recommended for deletion and another 15 or so that it recommended be rewritten. And what happened there with the delegates in Portland was some kind of a revolt. On the plank deletion voting, the delegates ended up voting to throw out about 80% of the planks in that platform. And
I see.
It would have been even more except a technicality because they had actually modified a few of the planks in that session. Those modified planks were exempt from the deletion vote that happened to them. So we ended up with a much smaller platform and one that was very lopsided. It had big holes in it, huge topic coverage areas that weren't covered. So for 2008, what our focus of our reform group was to come to Denver with a proposal for a comprehensive platform that tries to limit itself to just all the principles that unite libertarians, rather than including some of the details that divide us. And we took that proposal to the delegates, and we were kind of surprised by how vigorously they adopted it. So we were quite pleased with the results.
All right, now has your proposal with the planks in your proposal? I guess the plank is an item which is within the. Within the platform that you're going to change, right? Is that the definition of a plank?
Right. The bylaws require that the platform consists of a series of planks, and
right.
So each plank deals with one topic.
Now, you did. Now, I sat in on some of that. I got a headache. I'll be very honest with you. I guess I don't know if I have ADD or what, but. I thought Bill Rethcart and the rest of them did a marvelous job of keeping all that going. I think I would have jumped out the basement window if I had to put up with that because I don't have the tolerance for it. And I think you have to be a special person to actually coordinate all that activity of these little nuances back and forth. And I found it almost unnerving. I know it's necessary, and you just can't have mass hysteria. That with me, there would have been a brawl. But now, are you saying that the Reform Caucus, as presented, was accepted?
So the platform committee started its work in this cycle. Quite early, the committee was named last summer, and the final members were appointed by the end of the year. And we got to work pretty early. We came up with this draft, which became the eventual platform. And we met a few months ago in Las Vegas to do the early. Work of adopting. We met for over 2 days in Las Vegas and refined some of these plank proposals and built the majority on the committee to endorse these proposals. And then we came to Denver and did a little more refining. There were two or three planks that still needed work. And by the time we got to the floor on Saturday with our proposal, it was in pretty good shape, but the delegates did adopt almost entirely. There were about four planks where the delegates made changes, and they actually, made improvements. I was very impressed with how the process actually took our work and made it better.
Yeah. Well, I was absent from part of the convention because my son lives in Denver, and he called and he said, "We're going out." And I had no choice, so I really had to leave because I was there to see him. Also, I did spend most of my time at the convention, actually very little time with him, but there were parts that and the parts that I did miss were, in the general session, when they were discussing this. I'll be honest with you. And I'm not sure if I can say that, geez, I'm sorry I missed that, because I know that's tedious work, and I don't get involved in stuff like that. I'm more of an idealist, I guess, more than anything else. And I find that, and I leave that stuff to other people like you, you know, to get that work, yeah, the necessary work done.
You know, that's the beauty of our movement, is that there's a wide variety of people with a lot of different interests and a lot of different passions. One of the biggest problems with our movement is that a lot of people tend to believe that everyone needs to approach, you know, the freedom movement and the freedom struggle, you know, with the same tactics and the same set of interests.
Right.
But if you just let the people find their own way to contribute, you know, people will come out of the woodwork who like to work on this kind of stuff. And we certainly had a good group, you know, on the platform committee from across the ideological spectrum that worked together on this platform, and I think that's why it was approved so readily by the delegates, is that it has already been, you know, tested by fire on the platform committee.
I see. Well, I'm impressed, because when the times that I was there in the earlier parts of the general session, anytime something was brought up, if a word was not the exact word that somebody else felt it was appropriate, there was objection and second. You know, I'll be honest, I'm just not smart enough to follow that stuff. So if you got this stuff through, more power to you. I think that's wonderful. Now, Brian, I read the platform and, you know, the old platform, and I say, well, it sounds good to me. Let's go, boys. You know, I mean, that's how, I guess, how numb I am. But I guess I'm just an old-fashioned freedom fighter, you know. Screw everybody, you know. But I know you couldn't run an organization such as that. Now, I've built businesses before, and I've had to be very meticulous in what I was doing. But in this arena, I've never really paid attention to it, and I'll bet most libertarians have not. You know, they're more, probably more like me, saying, you know, I believe in freedom, screw everybody, you know. And so could you tell us what were the significant changes and why were they necessary? And you can take them in any order. Oh, by the way, okay. Brian, before you start, please, I just want to break for station identification. Folks, my name is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host. This is Liberty Talk Radio. We have as our guest Brian Hulse from the Libertarian Reform Caucus, and we're talking about the planks that were injected into the new platform of the Libertarian Party, basically changing a little bit of the platform to make it more palatable, I guess, just to the average person, and not to make it seem... And I guess, Brian, it was something which had to be done because it really was, in your opinion, exclusionary the way it was originally written. Is that true?
Well, the history of the platform is kind of fascinating, at least to some of us, you know, who get into this kind of thing. It started out in 1972. The original platform of the party,
right,
was explicitly, I guess the technical term would be minarchist. It explicitly called for a role, a legitimate role for government. And but then, as the party started growing in 74, you know, there was a significant anarchist contingent, and there was sharp debate over whether or not the party's official platform should call for the continued existence and legitimate role of the government at all. And so there was an agreement reached in which both sides sort of left that question open, and that left us with a platform that was, you know, had a few interesting phrases about, you know, government when instituted, you know, should not violate rights, and you know, things like that. But it was still a relatively compact platform that called for rolling back the size of government without being specific about, you know, where to stop. And then over the years, though, the platform just kept growing and growing, and it added provisions like, you know, personal secession, where any one person can just declare themselves to not be subject to the laws, or immediate non-enforcement of all tax laws, or immediate, open borders, you know,
right,
overnight.
And, yes.
And then there were issues in the 90s with the children's right, children's plank, and the whole notion of whether parents have any obligation to their children. And so basically, over time, there was kind of a ratchet mechanism in which, you know, more and more extremist details were added to the platform. And also it was getting kind of, stale in the sense that it was referring to government institutions that hadn't existed for years, because it was just so long that it couldn't be updated to keep up with the times. And so, in the 2004 platform, it made no reference to Iraq and to the war that was raging there, but it called for removing troops from the Philippines. But we only had about 55 troops left in the Philippines. We had closed the last base in the Philippines in the early 90s. So that was the kind of situation we were in when the Portland Convention decided to throw out most of the old platform. And so what we were faced with this time around was the challenge of basically putting in, far more new language, or not new language, but filling in more text, adding more text than had ever been added before. And we knew that there was not much chance of just trying to restore the planks that had been dropped in Portland. Those were unpopular. Both, even the radicals weren't interested in just simply restoring the exact text of those straight up. So the compromise we came up with was to go back, look at all the old platforms, as many as we could get our hands on, and find, pick and choose the ringing clear principles that had, before they'd been encrusted over with, the barnacles of all these details and stuff.
Right.
And basically polish them up and include, just go back to that classic language. And that really worked out well, because we ended up not writing very much new language at all for this platform. And that, I think, is why it was able to speed through, why we were able to adopt so many of these planks, in Saturday session, because we didn't have to spend a lot of time wordsmithing right there on the floor.
Right. Well, I never associated the Libertarian Party with anarchism. I always associated Libertarian Party with limited government. And that kind of surprises me. And I know there are people who are sort of more extreme than others regarding limited government, how limited it can be, but never anarchy. But there actually was sort of an anarchist component to the whole thing, then, you're saying?
That's right. There's always been people in the LP who are anarchists, and they serve a vital role in the party, I think, because they hold our feet to the fire in terms of always questioning, the role of government and whether there needs to be any government in a particular area of society, and that's what, it's that constant questioning of the legitimacy of government and the role of government that really gives the LP its its perspective, its critical perspective on the role of force in society. And I think the idea that both anarchists and minarchists have is that we don't need to really fight about what we're going to do when the freedom train finally gets to the point where some of us want to get off. As long as we're all on that train together, there's really no need to waste our energy fighting over those final details.
Well, apparently you did not have much objection to the planks as proposed.
To the planks that we proposed on Saturday.
Right.
Not really. I think the good thing that the committee did was to basically come up with kind of a lowest common denominator, the principles that we all can agree on and that nobody objects to, pretty much. And the one change that we did try, we actually met with serious objection, which was on the question of abortion. We had seen that in the recent conventions, two of the last three conventions had the abortion plank either had, in Portland, the abortion plank got only like 43% approval. So it would have been deleted, except that it had been merged through an editing. The committee in that convention had edited it to merge it with another plank, and because that was rubber stamped, that gave it enough approval that the made it immune from the vote that it lost. So we, when we looked at those numbers, we thought, okay, it looks like probably the delegates don't want to take such an extremist, you know, pro-choice position, because the language of the plank basically said that, you know, right up until the moment that the umbilical cord is cut, you know, it's the fetus is not does not get any legal protection, and that's kind of you know, there's a lot of libertarians who disagree with that position, and so what we were proposing in the committee was a plank that basically sort of left the LP neutral on the question, and when that proposal reached the floor on Saturday, it was resoundingly rejected, and so that was a real eye opener, and that could have been a serious problem, because at that point we still had about four or five planks left to adopt to fill in the holes in the platform, and we only had about 90 minutes left, and you know, how are you going to settle the abortion question in 90 minutes?
Right, I agree.
With a committee of, you know, 600 people, but luckily, Aaron Starr, the Libertarian Party's treasurer, stepped to a microphone, and he pulled a sentence out of the 2004 platform, which was about as ecumenical as you could hope for. It basically said that, you know, we recognize that, you know, people of, you know, good conscience disagree on all sides, but that the party believes that the government should stay out of the question. And it's still essentially a pro-choice position, but it is. You know, it's as kind of open-minded as you can hope for a pro-choice position to
right.
be, and so that language was adopted, and it pretty much you know, got us over that hurdle and let us finish our work on Saturday.
Well, it's interesting because the I spoke with Jan Imperato, Daniel Imperato's wife, and we just got talking, and I said, you know, I really would like to help Dan a little bit, because I think on his platform, he doesn't fully appreciate the libertarian principles. I said, I'll be very honest with you. I said, that's a problem that he's having here at the convention. And immediately she harped on the abortion issue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I think this is where you're going to have your problem. I said, because you're hitting on an issue that we can discuss for the longest period of time. I just want to help out, you know. But she got so involved and enthralled in this abortion issue, she got deeper and deeper and deeper. And I said, Jan, thank you very much for your time, and I left. But I've interviewed physicians regarding the abortion issue because, let's face it, I mean, it's an unsettling issue for everyone. There's a very few people who say, you know, I'm 100% this way or that way. I mean, no one's for abortion. I mean, but all the physicians that I have spoken to had been responsible people. And I don't, you know, and they'll tell me, they've told us on this program that they don't know of a physician who will perform an abortion on a woman who is 8 or 9 months pregnant, you know, and decides at the last minute, no, I don't want to have the kid aborted. I mean, they just wouldn't do it. I mean, they just right. would not do it. I mean, so, I mean, now, does it happen? Of course it happens. There's genocide. I mean, all sorts of crazy, there are crazy doctors out there. Of course there are non-doctors out there who'll do it. Absolutely. I mean, there's always the exception. But if you're looking at the medical community as a whole, and you're looking at, and even people who are carrying a child, I mean, a woman doesn't carry a child for 9 months and then say, well, I'm going to have a baby tomorrow, but I'll abort it today. That does not happen. If it does, it's got to be 1 in 10 million if it happens that often. So, you know, sometimes the wording in our platform can turn people off, thinking that, you know, we are, you know, way over the edge and whatever. And it is an individual issue. But when we make it an individual issue, we find that the situation is pretty well under control. When a woman has an abortion, it's usually the first few days or a couple of weeks when there's, you know, no brainstem, there's no this, there's no that. And decisions are made pretty quickly. They don't wait 6 months to make this decision. And doctors wouldn't do it anyway. So anyway, and I almost think in a way it's a moot point, you know, and yet it seems to dominate so much dialogue, you know, when we have items that we have control over, that we should have control over. But I agree, government should be out of it. The medical community can handle it. Local institutions can handle it. And quite frankly, you know, the woman who's pregnant can handle it, you know. And I think we take everything out of
its hands. In fact, we could have used you, I think, on the platform committee, because I really had my eyes opened only, you know, a few months ago when I was looking at some statistics and found out that the percentage of abortions that happen, you know, late term is just so vanishingly small that it seems like, you know, the practice that's in effect today is already, you know, kind of what I would advocate, which is, you know, legal in the first trimester, you know, illegal in the third trimester, and in the second trimester, well, okay, leave it up to maybe the states or the doctors or something. And that's in effect,
yeah,
you know,
right.
that's basically what we already have.
Right, absolutely. You know, it's the old, you know, analogy of, you know, since somebody got killed in an auto accident, we're going to take all the cars off the road. Well, you know, you're not going to do that. And how many tens of thousands of people die in car accidents, and yet we don't take the cars off the road. But if we hear of one child being aborted late term, the world comes to an end and everyone becomes regulated. It gets ridiculous, you know? It's more fear than anything else. Anyway, but I couldn't get Jan Imperato off that subject. It was a very frustrating experience because Dan's kind of a neat guy. And you know, he reminds me of William Shatner. If you look at him, he does.
Right.
He,
and I think that, the reason that the issue is like that is because it's one of the three, what I call the franchise schisms in the party. And what these are are three issues that have to do not with the relationship between, you know, the government and the adult citizens that who are subject to the government, because that's when you're talking about something like that, all libertarians are really cut and dried about how adult citizens should be left alone by the government.
Right.
But where you get into franchise issues is it's a question of whether a person is or should be subject to the protections of the U.S. government, and where that. Where that hit the rubber meets the road there is the unborn, and also foreigners, whether foreigners can come here through immigration or whether foreigners should ever be protected or intervened for, you know, like in the case of Iraq and libervention and as it's so called.
Yeah.
So these three areas of abortion, immigration, and foreign intervention are all in a sense, you know, schisms that have developed within the LP over questions of franchise and whether or not these certain entities, you know, should be subject to, you know, protections from the U.S. government in the same way that adult U.S. citizens are protected, and that's why I think it's been important to try to you know, to be ecumenical towards libertarians like Ron Paul, for example. He on immigration and on abortion, he tends to go with what is arguably a minority view within the LP, and yet
he's
still, you know, hugely popular, and also, I think that for those three subjects, we should all try to be, you know, forgiving and open-minded towards our fellow libertarians.
That is correct, because this issue has a religious component, and once you have a religious component, if you believe in something, that's not going to change unless a person's ready to abandon their religion, and they're not going to do that for an issue. So it's almost like saying, well, Brian, the reason why I'm right and you're wrong is because God told me I was right. Well, the conversation's over. You know,
right.
There's no more. I don't leave any room for discussion. And this is basically what Jan did, is she threw in the religious component. And I said, fine, if you believe that, then that's how you live your life. But there may not be people with a belief system that complements yours, that is totally different than yours, and it may be perfectly legitimate. And you cannot restrict that person from believing the way they want. You want them to believe as you believe. And I ended by saying, I said, Jan, let me tell you let's say one thing before we leave, because she went on for about 15 minutes. I had a headache because she wouldn't stop with the religious stuff. And I mean, with her religious belief, I said, I agree with you that a unborn fetus is a life form. I mean, there's no question about it. It's a life form. It's growing. Something is happening. And I said, I'm not a biologist or anything like that, a physiologist. I said, but I can tell you one thing. It is not a human being. I said, now, if you want to throw in the religious component with a free soul, a free will at this point, I said, that is only a belief. That's nice stuff for you to believe. God bless you. That's fine. But there are people who don't believe that, so you can't impose that on them. And that's how I left her. Anyway, but, okay, well, I guess the I'm glad to see that the abortion issue was, I guess, handled and put to rest in a quasi-satisfactory way, at least satisfactory to not only ourselves, but for people outside the Libertarian Party. That's my concern. I mean, looking in at us.
The language that we settled on in Denver should make it clear to people who are, you know, on the fence about whether to line up with the LP, that we are open-minded. We do recognize that the people have, you know, principled differences on this question, and it shouldn't stop anybody from joining with us to try and, you know, rein in the government.
Right. Okay, Brian, just time for a station identification again. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. Tonight we're interviewing Brian Holt from the Libertarian Reform Caucus. Our number is 646-652-4620. Now, we know we're out there. You're out there. We know you're listening. We'd like you to get your telephone or your cell phone and dial 646-652-4620 and with your opinion. We have four open lines, folks. This is Sunday evening. Come on, we usually have some phone lines in. And please don't decide to call in 2 minutes before we go off the air, as you normally do. I'm scolding you now. You know that. So please call in early. 646-652-4620. We have Brian Holtz from the Libertarian Reform Caucus, and we are talking about the reformation, I guess, of the Libertarian platform. All right, that was one item. What was the next item, Brian, that the next big item that was tackled, and to your satisfaction or dissatisfaction?
The thing that I think was most pleasing to me was the environment. The environment was a topic where the Libertarian Party has always had a very, in my opinion, inadequate answer. I think that for most questions, the Libertarian Party's approach, which is simply, you know, define property rights. If the government is going to have any role, it should be to set up a judicial system so that people can sue to protect their property rights, and to have the courts, you know, settle claims about, you know, people spilling stuff across property lines. You know,
right.
You spill your motor oil and it leaks into my, you know, my garden. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And for 99% of the issues that you can imagine, that I think is absolutely the right way to go. You don't want, you know, government bureaucrats making rules about what kind of products can be manufactured and bought and sold and stuff.
Right.
But you do end up with some marginal issues that in a modern industrial society can really get serious, and those have to do with you know, the kinds of pollution where it's very it's a many to many kind of pollution where there's lots of people driving with their tailpipes and millions of people putting smog into the Bay Areas, you know, where I live here in Silicon Valley, and so you get a smog effect where there's no one, you know, corporation or one neighbor that you can go after in court to try to put a limit on this.
Well, yeah, and may I interrupt you for a second? In that case, the dragging tailpipe with the black smoke coming out, there's no one particular person being harmed. It's the community that's being harmed in that case.
Right,
so you don't have Bob Jones, who's going to bring the guy who's riding around in his 54 Ford with a broken tailpipe, belching out black smoke. He doesn't know who he is. He's not going to go chasing him down the street, get a license plate number, and bring him to court. I guess this is what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
The victim is so distributed, and then the aggressor is so distributed,
right,
that the transaction cost of actually taking this kind of thing to court are just too high. And so we worked on coming up with some language to deal with this kind of thing. And we couldn't really reuse anything that was in the previous platforms, but we came up with a nice little paragraph that I think it's kind of vague, but it says the right things, and it opens a broad enough umbrella that libertarians with various approaches to enforcing property rights and resources can find room under that umbrella to be happy with where the party stands, and so we've kind of expanded a bit beyond what had been our stock answer, which was that if you don't like the smog that you see from your window, then you just need to call your lawyer and start suing people until the smog goes away.
Well, I mean, that's unrealistic. Do you happen to have the wording of the plank for that one that was accepted?
Yeah, let's see. Let me just read it. It's short enough that we can read it. It says, "We support a clean and healthy environment and sensible use of our natural resources. Private landowners and conservation groups have a vested interest in maintaining natural resources. Pollution and misuse of resources cause damage to our ecosystem. Governments, unlike private businesses, are unaccountable for such damage done to our environment and have a terrible track record when it comes to environmental protection.
Correct.
Protecting the environment requires a clear definition and enforcement of individual rights in resources like land, water, air, and wildlife. Free markets and property rights stimulate the technological innovations and behavioral changes required to protect our environment and ecosystems. We realize that our planet's climate is constantly changing, but environmental advocates and social pressure are the most effective means of changing public behavior."
So, okay. Well, boy, that's it. I think I heard what you said, but it almost sounded like a cop-out. Or did I read that incorrectly?
Right. It doesn't put us on record for very specific solutions because – some of us, I, for example, think that it's okay to have a system of pre-calculated fines, if burning a gallon of gasoline, produces, 20 cents of aggression to your community, then I don't mind, collecting that 20-cent fine at the pump.
Right.
You could certainly have a system whereby someone who protests that they're not going to burn it here, or that they're going to burn it in a cleaner way, that they can protest the fine, and it could be adjudicated the same way that the sort of the old-fashioned libertarian system wants it to be. It's just that that some of us think that the default fine shouldn't be nailed at zero. That for some kinds of transactions and products, you might want to have the pricing system, put a fine, build the fine into the pricing system, and then let the market and let the economy and let all the people decide whether or not a particular use of a product is worth the amount of harms that it imposes on the community. So, but that's something that a lot of libertarians still disagree with, and so we didn't want to put something like that directly into the platform,
right?
Because again, that's a level of specificity that's going to cause division rather than unity. So,
yeah. So
what we did was basically just back off a bit from the old position of torts and lawsuits will take care of everything, and you don't have to worry. To kind of a general statement about how we want markets to address things, and we think that that technological solutions and that cultural or social pressure will combine with the pricing system and with the lawsuits to be a better answer than government regulation and bureaucratic control.
I would love to have a debate with someone, and I'm far from an expert on the subject, but in fact I'm not an expert at all, other than I have my own dumb opinions. But the example of the guy with the car that's belching out black smoke, I think is one that's as used in this argument, saying, well, without regulation, how does the policeman know not to stop this person and whatever? And when you think of it, when you're driving around, and I don't know, where do you live, Brian? What town?
You're here in the San Francisco Bay Area, Silicon Valley.
Okay, Silicon Valley. How many cars every day go down your street belching black smoke backfiring?
My particular street, not very many at all.
Yeah, I would venture. I want to venture to say, and I want to make a bet with you that there may be a week that may go by, and there may not be one in some weeks.
Probably. Oh yeah.
Okay. Now this is my point. My point is that we use that as an example. Say, well, how are we going? So we're going to control everyone because of this. Again, one guy out of 10,000, and these people who do, and there are cars out there. I mean, I see them on occasion, you know, going down the street, and they smell like heck, and they're belching smoke. And you're right, the tailpipe is dragging on the floor, sparks are flying and stuff like that. But how many cars do you see like that? I mean, what happens is they get flushed through the system. You know, eventually that car dies, it goes through a shredder, and he has to buy a new car. And it becomes also an economic issue because people who don't have as much money tend not to buy the newer cars with the latest technology. So it's really a tax on the poor. If you want to get sectional about it, you know, in society, you can say, well, you're picking on the poorer people because the poorer people don't have the money to buy the high-tech computerized cars that are totally clean. And on the end, in addition to that, there are cars out there that look perfectly clean, but they can be polluting like hell. But it could be transparent, just like carbon monoxide is totally colorless, tasteless, and odorless. How do you sue somebody for that? You don't know what's happening, but it can kill you. So, I mean, there are so many issues there. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I had to put in my two cents. But you see my point.
The key thing is that we shouldn't have government bureaucrats, putting in strict rules that say, you cannot sell a car that, gets less than 20 miles a gallon, or
right.
You cannot sell a car unless it, has this kind of equipment on it. The important principle is to the technical term is to internalize the externalities. That means as long as everyone who's involved in a transaction, whether it's burning a gallon of gas or what have you, that as long as all the people who are negatively impacted by that decision, have their say about it, and if they don't, then you just fold the cost of the harm you do to them into the price of the transaction, and then you can decide. Because if you really, really, really want to burn that gallon of gas, then you're willing to pay the price. And if the net benefit to you is more than the cost of the pollution, then it's actually still a positive sum situation for you to actually burn that gas and enjoy, whatever it was you were going to do with it. So that's the key insight I think that we all agree on is that you can't have the government bureaucrats deciding, what people cannot do or must do. Rather, you just change the incentives, make sure that all the incentives are lined up right, and then let the market decide.
Right. Well, most of my many of my close friends are, they call themselves social democrats. They're socialists. They're communists. They don't realize it, But let me throw in another monkey wrench in the gears of this whole thing. I have a car that gets 10 miles to the gallon, right? I drive 10 miles a week. Another guy has a car that gets 30 miles to the gallon. He drives 300 miles a week. Who's polluting more?
Exactly.
You get into these, and if I want to buy a Hummer, that gets 8 miles to the gallon, if it sits in my garage and it's going to be a show car, and it goes 1 mile a month, I just drive around the neighborhood to make sure that the gaskets don't dry out. I'm not polluting at all. You see the directions that we can go, and that's why I think it's a very interesting conversation. I got to hit you with one, though. Immigration. How did you guys wind up with that?
Well, for that one, we didn't really change much from the language that we inherited in 2006. So as part of the big platform changes that happened in 2006, there was a rewrite of the immigration plank. And basically what it said is that it sort of hand waves towards the traditional libertarian idea that the default should be open borders and free migration of people. But we do say that that there needs to be control over immigration, at least in the areas of threats to security, health, and property.
Yeah.
So
and you know that's so not possible.
Right. Yeah.
It's not possible.
Basically, we punted on this one. We just sort of took the core of the vague compromise language that was adopted in 2006, and we just preserved that without trying to go back to the 100% unlimited immigration of the traditional platform, or trying to get any kind of fanciness or specificity. Now, the proposal that I threw out there that was shot down in the committee had to do with saying that we basically support unlimited immigration as long as there's no trespass involved, and as long as the people who come in are sponsored in the same way, perhaps by themselves, but they're economically sponsored in the same way that parents sponsor newborn children, who were born into the country. So my approach was that if you just make sure there's no trespass, and you make sure that the people who come in have the same level of sponsorship as the people who were born in, then you can treat immigration exactly as you treat childbirth. And we don't have any laws or rules on how many kids you can have, because you have a natural incentive to only have as many kids as you can afford. And so similarly, if we have rules about sponsorship and trespass, then basically I think you would become a self-limiting and self-regulating phenomenon.
Right, but how do you get sponsorship?
It would be either by demonstrating that you can work to support yourself, or
You can be self-sponsored.
Right.
Self-sponsorship.
Or if there's a group that wants to make the same kind, incur the same obligations for you as an immigrant that a parent would incur for having a child.
I want to throw something out just for information, and I'm going to guess on this, but we got, let's say that's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. I'm guessing, this is a very rough figure, somewhere around 14,000 miles where someone can come into the United States. Around 15,000, round figures, about 15,000 miles of border that we have. Now you say, well, geez, we only have a border with Canada, which is only 3,000 miles. It's over 3,000 miles. The border between Mexico and the United States is, by the way, 1,970 miles. Then, of course, we have the entire Pacific Ocean. That's that's close. That's over 2,000 miles. And then we have the Gulf of Mexico and the East Coast, which we're probably talking about another 5,000 miles there, somewhere around 15,000 miles. We really can't, from a practical point of view, control our borders. You cannot control 15,000 miles of border when you look at it. People can come on here by ships. They can leave Mexico and just go take a rowboat, go around and land on a beach, in southern Texas. And they're off they're off and running. So from a practical point of view, I always think that was kind of interesting when people say we have to control our borders. I said, fine, you and what mega army is going to do that? Anyway, very good. Well, I'm glad to see, the only time that immigration actually went down to near zero in this country, do you know when that was, Brian?
I'm guessing during a war, maybe.
No, during the Depression. You see, jobs did it. Yeah, okay. During the Depression, immigration stopped. Isn't that amazing? Anyway, all right. Now, what was the third? We have time for maybe one more issue very, very quickly. What was the third hottest item, or the next hottest item?
Well, the one that was most gratifying to me was... again, getting back to the topic of secession, the secession plank, because it had been so extreme, was always next to abortion and immigration one of the lowest polling planks. And in fact, so we came up with a secession plank that left off the individual secession, but it was still, I think, had enough of that taint that when the committee got back together last Thursday in Denver, they actually threw out the self-determination plank, as we had renamed it. We even took out the word secession. Still didn't help. So I was desperate to keep something like that in there, because I think it's an important principle, and also, frankly, the minority that was trying to have their own proposals, they would have lost a chance to put one of their planks up against ours. So at the last minute, I threw together some wording that was based on not a recycled libertarian platform language, but actually from Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence. And it basically said that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of individual liberty, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to agree to such new governance as to them shall seem most likely to protect their liberty.
Well, that's that's consistent with our Constitution, though.
Pardon?
That's consistent with our Constitution.
It's very vague. This is straight out of the Declaration of Independence,
right,
with a little bit of wording change.
Right, exactly. That's right. The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
You're right. Right.
And the basic idea is that the people ultimately have to give their consent to be governed. And
that's correct.
So we were really running out of time, like we are now, and we had 5 minutes left to go with the Saturday session when we came up upon this plank. But the delegates had such a head of steam that when they saw this language, even though it wasn't from a previous libertarian platform, they just shouted down any efforts to block this plank, and it was just adopted, thunderously. And that's what finished our platform up and made it complete now.
Well, that's great. Brian, we have about 3 minutes. I want to give you at least 1.5, 2 minutes to tell our radio audience about your organization and if there's anything that our listeners can do for you or any place that you would like to refer them to. Please
sure.
Go there.
So the Libertarian Reform Caucus is, even though we got a lot of what we wanted in Denver, we still have a few things that we'd like to do. Our website is reformvlp.org, and it looks like for the next cycle, what we're going to focus on, well, for the immediate term, we want to promote this platform and make sure that that all our candidates, live up to it. When there's concerns about, Bob Barr, and we think that this platform will be a tool for helping the party unite around him and helping him make sure that he, follows a clear libertarian right. message. But then in 2010, we would like to take a look at the pledge. There's dispute within the party over the meaning of the non-initiation of force pledge that the party has, and right. some say it's a pledge against using terrorism or violence for revolutionary violence. Others say no, it's a strict political principle about how the government must have zero taxation and zero force. And so we want to either clarify the pledge or to get rid of it.
Right.
And so that's something that we didn't try in Denver, but we'd like to take a look at in 2010.
Okay, very good. Brian, you have my email address. If you'd like, please email me your mailing address and your T-shirt size. I'd love to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt. We just ordered a whole new batch, and they should be coming in the next couple of days. I'd love to mail you one. And, of course, you would wear it proudly, would you not?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, Brian, thank you very much for being our guest this evening. This has been a terrific interview. This will play continually 24 hours a day until, let's say, Thursday morning at 6:30 when we rebroadcast live again. So hopefully we'll get some exposure and you will get some feedback.
Cool.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brian, and good night to you.
Thank you. Good night.
Folks, that was a fascinating interview. I'm glad to see the Libertarian Party has made some steps in the right direction. I think they're correct in what they've done. They've taken, wacko language out of the platform, and they've made it just regular, we the people type language, similar to our Declaration of Independence. I think that's terrific. Well, right now, let's see, where are we? Oh, I guess we're at the end of our program. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir, everybody. And I'm very disappointed in you folks tonight. We didn't have any callers call in. So Thursday morning, I hope you're saving up your questions and you'll call in then. All right. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. And we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. And now we have a new number. During the week, if you want to phone in your questions, please call in to 918 area code 919-0101. That's 918 area code 919-0101 with your comments and questions. Remember, folks, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. One last thing, we will have on Thursday morning a discussion of the Argentinian financial crisis now going into effect. Remember, folks, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until Thursday morning, stay well. Stay tuned.